It is time for this week's Message in the Bottle here on Downtown, joined in studio, as we are each Tuesday, by Eric Meehan of Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. Hello, sir.
Good afternoon, Radioland.
How's Thank everybody? You for my Girl Scout cookies.
You're welcome. He did pay, by the way. I didn't just bring those in for him for free. I know Cutler was complaining about cookies not magically appearing. He needs to remember that. He needs, well, when I put it out on Facebook, see, I always forget to, like, tell people that, you know, it's time. And then my wife reminds me, it's like, oh, it's the last day. And so I put it out on Facebook, and, you know, people have about an hour to respond. And Cutler, he missed.
I jumped in early.
Well, that's because you're friends with my wife on Facebook and much more responsible than me, probably. And, well, I know the cookies are coming, so I have no impetus to, like, go out and get them. Like, I've already eaten almost an entire box of the chocolate-covered peanut butter monstrosities.
Oh, yes. And, well, my wife and I didn't discuss, which is so fine, because she came home with cookies from her place of employment.
Yeah. So they're everywhere. I mean, they were, the part of the mafia was out at Shaw's the other day, and, you know, they come up to you like, Mr., would you like to buy? They kind of, like, just start, like, pulling their fingers across their throats and, like, looking at me. I'm like, I'll take it. One pecan sandy. No, that's not even a Girl Scout cookie. Pecan sandies. Gosh. So we're on to a new month, I think, right?
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
My gosh. Huh. So cool. We're working our way through winter, and God willing, Carrie's prediction of just some slush is going to hold true, and we're just going to continue to work our way through winter. So we're talking about, this is my favorite month. This is the check out that package month. We're talking about packaging options, right? Because of course, the most important thing in the world that happened was the creation of wine, but after that, for a long, long time, what did you do with that wine? You drank it where it was, pretty much. Or there was, you know, it was a very difficult thing to get around. So the second most beautiful thing that ever happened is that they came up with different packaging options to get said beverage into your house and then into your glass and into your mouth. And so we're going to be talking about that and closure methods and all sorts of things. But just to kind of start things off today, we're going to talk about bottles, because, frankly, they weren't around again back when wine was invented in the Middle East, those many thousands of years ago. There was no such thing as blowing glass. So with no blowing glass, no bottles, no wine bottles, no wine bottles, no wine stores, no wine merchants. I would be adrift. I wouldn't know what to do with myself. And so the first, just so you know, first produced glass just in general, and this is just period, was around 3000 BC in northern Syria. But it was not until the Romans invented glass blowing that bottles were produced. And that was a long time ago. And I'm sure that Romans' love of the vinified stuff was part of their impetus for figuring that out because, you know. But still, the glass that was made back then was very, very delicate. So it wasn't really efficient for transporting, you know, 750 milliliter bottles of, you know, all around. Nor, I'm sure, did the metric system even exist. So it wasn't really a thing. Although it was coming along shortly with the Romans and everything. So what happened is, of course, amphora, right? So and this is sort of a thing because now wine is being made in amphoras, and that's sort of a huge hit. So what is the difference? Well, there's a difference between burying amphora in the ground, which is how they, you know, ferment wine and make wine in these amphoras along sort of the sort of Georgian tradition is where a lot of these traditions have been sort of upkept. But they'd bury them in the ground, and that would provide the sort of the temperature stabilization and stuff that they needed. But the amphora, of course, that they would use for transport were still fairly large. I mean, if you've ever been to any place in Europe where the Romans were, and boy, weren't they everywhere, very often in museums, because they like their wine, you will see, you know, amphora or, you know, ruin, you know, shards of amphora. It was a big, big industry. It was a big, big deal. And the interesting thing about amphora, it didn't change the wine at all, right? So they discovered sort of an inert way of transporting the wine. Because, of course, barrels and things like that do change the character of the wine over time. There's air, there's oxygen going in. But the amphoras basically provided a fairly closed environment. So that was a good idea for a long, long time. However, in the 17th century, coal-burning furnaces came into being and started allowing for hotter temperatures to thereby allow thicker glass to be made, and therefore you had more durable bottles. And so this is when you started to see bottles being used as a liquid vessel. And around the same time in the Iberian Peninsula, so that's Portugal and Spain, and this is no coincidence, we'll go into why, cork was starting to be used as a closure method. And that makes a lot of sense when you understand that the majority of the trees that provide cork, and we'll talk a little bit more about cork next week, are in Portugal. So, boom. Cork, bottles, and there we had the beginning of it. But the next thing that had to happen, and it took a long, long time, is for bottles to be standardized. And again, if anybody's ever been over, for instance, still to this day, to southern parts of Germany, they use a very sort of strange oblong sort of bottle for their wines. And they do kind of stack and ship well, but they're not really great. So really was the thing that we wanted to kind of standardize and figure out how best to make wine bottles for more commercial production so that, you know, a glass producer could make a bunch and then sell it to a bunch of different producers. It wasn't a one-off thing. And what else started to happen, this is around the mid-1700s, wine started to be aged. And people started to realize, like, oh, that was a really good thing, you know, when you know, maybe young was a little too tannic, whatever, it took some time. And so, as we all know from paying attention to this weekly segment, wine is best aged on its side, touching the cork, so making sure that the cork still is moist and therefore, you know, providing a really good seal. And then, of course, in the dark and in the cold, but that's sort of not the point of today. So we started to see the shorter, rounder bottles begin, and they were very popular. I mean, again, if you go to museums like that, they were, you know, big, beautiful, bulbous things, but they didn't really store well. You started to see longer, flatter-sided bottles really start to take the world by storm. However, it wasn't until 1979 that the U.S. set the 750 milliliter standard bottle. So anything on your typical shelf, 750 milliliters was adopted in 1979, and it was adopted by most of the rest of the world. There's still places that kind of cling to, like Austria, for instance, and Switzerland a little bit, do liter bottles more than these, especially for a lot of their younger wines. So, you know, you'll see liter bottles of Grüner Veltliner or Zweigelt or things like that. And of course, half bottles have started to come, you know, become very popular, and hopefully people will start making more of those. They are a little bit more cost prohibitive because they do tend to be a dollar or two more than half the price, but they're still pretty cool.
So can the size or shape of the bottle have a positive or negative impact on the taste?
Well, it can, the taste not necessarily, but it will affect the taste. It's a good question. So when liquids are stored in bulk, and this is not just wine, but of course, you know, we work in olive oils and vinegars and things like that. The more of the liquid and, of course, less oxygen in there, the slower it's going to oxidize, right? And essentially oxidization is aging. I mean, that's what's happening inside the bottle very, very slowly. And so a half bottle will age faster because there's less liquid per air trapped in the ullage, which is that little space between the liquid and the cork and in the wine itself. So it's going to age a little bit faster. So it's kind of fun. And then 750. And then, of course, we have the larger bottles, right? Like the Magnum. And the Magnum is what we call one that is two bottles worth, so 1.5 liters. And that will age slower than a standard size bottle and much slower still than a half size bottle, and on and on and on. And there are some very large format bottles. You may have seen them in our stores or other stores. There's double Magnums, which, of course, are 3 liters. And then they start getting into the Biblical Kings series, the Jeroboams, the Nebuchadnezzars, Methuselahs, all sorts of things like that. And I didn't bring my chart with me. I always forget which pertains to what. But basically, there's getting up to like 12-liter bottles, and they are impressive. I did have a...
Has to be delivered by camel.
Well, they do come in single large boxes that you could probably... bury a large dog in if you drink the wine. But it's a lot of fun, and they make quite the impression at a party when you and people are so hesitant. But it's, again, a Magnum is just two bottles, right? So if you're going to drink two bottles of the same wine anyway, and there's a magnum of it, try it out for a party. It's fun. Sure. Or throw it in your cellar because it's going to take a nice long time to age. So, yeah. The wine we're drinking today, speaking of things, so standard 750 milliliter size bottle with a regular old corky cork. Landmark Vineyards Pinot Noir. Mm. This is a wine that we just got in, by the way.
And that's nice.
It's drinking absolutely beautifully. Mm. Fun fact about Landmark Vineyards. It was a winery started with money from the John Deere farm equipment family. Mm. So, I guess they had the machinery to till the fields and then the money and wherewithal to buy some and do it. But a really lovely Pinot Noir that we just got in. So I highly recommend going and checking that out if you're a Pinot fan. And we do have our tasting next week, next Thursday from 5 to 7 p.m. Still deciding on wines. Again, since we're kind of talking about packaging, I'm trying to find some good wines in alternate packaging. I'm sure we're going to do at least one good boxed wine.
Oh, yeah.
But there's some wines in cans that are actually good wines in cans coming up. So we're going to probably have some of those as well. So do come out again next Thursday from 5 to 7 p.m. That's the 15th, yes?
That's 15th right, again. Yes.
Beautiful. So that'll be a lot of fun. And then our wine of the week as well, which is not this Pinot Noir, but is really, really good if anybody's looking for a nice, fun little Italian wine. That is on sale. It's called the Popolo di Indie Langhe Rosso. So it's a red blend from the Piedmont region of Italy. So check that out as well. And we look forward to seeing you in the shop.
And thank you for teaching me the word eulogy.
Oh, yeah. It's a good one, yeah? You can pull that out.
My friend Danny get kicked in the eulogy that time.
That's
playing
right. And
soccer,
no one will have any idea. No They'll clue. Think it's a dirty word.
Exactly.
It's the most brilliant thing about it. Brilliant.
Thank you.
Cheers, gentlemen.
Bye. See ya. That's Eric May and Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street, Bangor. Message in the bottle.